Welcome to another episode of Brown Teacher Reads. I'm Mina Malik, a Brown high school English teacher, and I am continuing my discussion of the teachers from Never Have I Ever in this episode. Last episode, in part one, I discussed the function of the teachers within the show. And in this episode, which is part two, I'm going to be talking more specifically about Mr. Shapiro and Mr. Kulkarni and the different decisions they make and how they carry themselves and interact with their students and stuff. And this is going to be more of a teacher-to-teacher discussion. Starting with Mr. Shapiro, I want to talk about what I just love about him as a teacher. And the first thing that I love about Mr. Shapiro is the choices he makes in setting up his curriculum and setting up his classes. From what I see in the show, it seems like Mr. Shapiro is really emphasizing the students in the classroom and the students' like holistic learning and benefit. And so my first example of this is just in the way he frames the class. In the first scene we see him, he introduces the class as facing history and ourselves. He is doing something amazing by telling students what the true lesson of a history class is. What's the point of a history class? It's not just a class you get in and get out of, you memorize some facts, you do really well on a test, and then you forget the majority of those facts for the remainder of your life. Mr. Shapiro is really elevating history as a subject area, and he's really forcing it to match its true potential. When we talk about just learning for the sake of learning and what's the good about learning, and we talk about history, there are different things that we believe in different societies. And like one of them is, to quote Muse, he who knows the past controls the future. So this idea of how you take what happened in history, you study it, you learn from it, and you see what went well, what went bad, and how do you take that into your own life and make the current life that everyone is living much better? What are the lessons you've learned? And Mr. Shapiro is doing just that. And I really respect him for that. And we also see in the first scene in which we are introduced to Mr. Shapiro, and the comedic nature of it is amazing, straight up. But he does say, you know, we're going to be talking about really ugly things in our history, like slavery and the Holocaust. And he like looks at Fabiola, who is Black, and then he looks at Ben, who is Jewish, when he says those things, and he like motions towards them. And we know how Fabiola and Ben like respond to that. They're just like, what? Like, why are you looking at me? And, you know, obviously that's not the best choice to really do that and make your students feel awkward and put them on the spot and make them feel weird. But I also love how Mr. Shapiro is taking the time to notice who is in his classroom demographically speaking. I am sure that in this 10th grade history class, they are probably covering slavery and the Holocaust anyways. But I love how he is also thinking about which students might this really pertain to and affect in a different way, because this is their own personal or ancestral history. It's really part of their family's legacy and part of their identity, whether they realize that or not. And, you know, we see that with Paxton coming later on. And it also just makes me think, as a soft science teacher, if you're teaching history, if you're teaching English, there really should be a culturally reflective curriculum based on the students in your school and the specific students in your classroom. So for me, as a high school English teacher, if and more hopefully when I go back into a classroom and teach, I would love to be able to know, who are the students in my classroom? How do they identify across various intersectionalities? And how can I find texts for them to interact with, which are reflective of their own experiences in some way? As I mentioned in my BTR origin story about my own high school experience, at least in my English class, I never read anything from someone who wasn't white. I can't even recall reading a major work or spending a significant amount of time on an African-American writer, let alone a South Asian writer. And it's not like African Americans and South Asians and all these other different minority groups who are often marginalized, it's not like we don't like produce amazing fiction or amazing poetry. It's just that like literally people don't give us the time of day and it's not in the quote unquote English canon. And I would really love to imagine Mr. Shapiro as a type of teacher to say, this is kind of my set curriculum. This is what I have to cover in, you know, history this year, from this region. But based on my students, what their personal histories are, and what their interests could be, what might excite them, what might I spend a little bit more time and effort and energy on, and how do I reach those students in a supportive and collaborative way? The second thing I like that Mr. Shapiro does about curriculum is his out-of-the-box kind of projects and assessments, which are a little bit more creative. So, you know, in history, you just assume that you're just gonna roll up, take a multiple choice test, maybe write a short essay or two. But Mr. Shapiro comes up with a really creative project in season one and also a really meaningful project in season two. In season one, he talks about creating an app that could have helped mitigate some of the atrocities and casualties in World War I. And I love how he takes this like completely relevant thing happening in the students' lives where they all have smartphones, they all use some type of apps, and he's asking them to use something they know to explore something they're learning about. And so not only does he make this like more relevant and more exciting for the students, right? And you do see that the students are using their own knowledge about like marketing and things to talk about, you know, the logo design at Trent's house. Like the bee is just too plain. Can we have a little dude poking his head out of the bee? Or even like talking about that little tagline like that Paxton comes up with, which is like super long. And then Trent's like, it should be something like short and sexy, like Live Mas. And so we do see that the students get to use their real world knowledge and probably knowledge that they didn't even know was relevant or useful or valuable to help them have a better, you know, final product in their history class. But it also does something really cool where it opens up this idea for students that now that I've thought about designing an app one time, like maybe I could actually think about designing a different app and it could be actually like a business idea or something they do with their life and they carry on. So I think that opportunity for like the real world knowledge coming in and that real world potential application much later is so legit and so cool. Mad props to you, Mr. Shapiro. I also love in season two how he does have that personal history connecting, something we talked about in this class, with your own personal or family history. And I'll talk about that more in a second. And I love how this is a bit of an open-ended project, or at least that's what it seems like to me, and that a student could take it and go in any direction they wanted. The third thing I love about Mr. Shapiro's choices in creating a curriculum and just, you know, the nuts and bolts of his class in terms of the academics is that he's trying to get the students to make personal connections between their own lives and their family's legacies with what they've been learning about in their history class. And I also love how he allows the students to be the expert. The best example of this is, you know, Mr. Shapiro giving that extra credit assignment of students trying to talk about something in the American saga that touched their family's history personally. And the nature of this project forces the student to make connections into their own life, but it also presents the student as the expert. When the student is teaching their peers about something they've probably already heard addressed in class, but in a whole new way and in a highly personalized way. I wish that Mr. Shapiro had not just made this extra credit. I wish it was something that every student had to do, at least maybe a mini version of the project, if not present it in front of everybody, because I do think that type of a project is so, so crucial for students when we talk about history and English classes in high school. One of the most frustrating things for me when I was going through high school is that we didn't have like real conversations about racism. We didn't have real conversations about immigration and other things that like the majority of my peers and I were facing. Like when I was in high school at Sunny Hills in Fullerton, California, about 60% of my classmates were Korean. But that's only even accounting for, you know, just 60% of the students. Like, a good percentage of our student population was Latinx. And then we did have a handful of other, you know, Asian American groups represented at my school. The majority of students were not white in that school. The majority of teachers were white. And so issues about being, you know, second generation or talking about immigration in real ways, or even just talking about like the world wars and other things in a way which would have allowed us as students to connect with the material in a highly personal way and to also investigate the material that we were learning about. But how is this a part of my history? How is this a part of my legacy? Why does this matter to me? I feel like this is the type of thing that would get students really excited about learning and have some type of buy-in. And it also helps students approach history and English, especially in the, you know, white male canon that they are generally taught in across the country. It would help students from marginalized backgrounds also think critically about things and start to question things and wonder, well, why isn't this part of the story included? Or why has this perspective been completely ignored? Or how is this story doctored in a certain way to make a certain group of people appear in a more flattering light? And you really see that happening with Paxton, right? So obviously, Paxton is simply doing this extra credit assignment because he wants to improve his grades and he wants to beat Ben at something, right? And we see a student like Paxton, which Davey describes him as not stupid, as Ben is accusing him in Davis, but someone who's just not interested in school. Well, we see Paxton like going literally above and beyond, swimming to San Diego and putting his whole heart and soul into this extra credit assignment. And that moment when Paxton volunteers to do the extra credit assignment, right? We see Mr. Shapiro very comedically being like, oh, do you need to use the bathroom or something, Paxton? He's like, no, I want to do the extra credit assignment. And even Mr. Shapiro is like surprised and shocked, right? And then we see him kind of trying to cover up his surprise in a very, you know, self-aware way where he's like, oh, I don't want to like make the students think that I'm shocked that Paxton is showing an interest in something that isn't a forced assignment. And then he also has that really tender moment where he turns around and he's like having this like little like emotional moment. And I'm also feeling really emotional where he's like, you're making a difference, Lyle. And like those moments where you get to like turn around and your heart is like leaping out of your chest, or you're shedding tears of joy and pride because you see your student caring, or you see your student growing. Like, that's why I wanted to be a teacher. And I feel like that's why Mr. Shapiro wants to be a teacher. And like, good for you, Mr. Shapiro. You deserve that moment as a freaking awesome teacher. And in the context of the show specifically with this extra credit assignment, we see that Paxton is tapping into part of his family history and he is helping open the conversation up within his own family, and he is catalyzing a sort of family healing. And you know, maybe for Paxton's grandfather, he will start going around to high schools and start giving talks about his experience in the Japanese internment camps in Manzanar. Maybe this will be like what he does every, you know, Tuesday. And I feel like Mr. Shapiro probably has some history teacher friends, and he's probably like getting Paxton's grandfather's information at the end amidst the tears once again. And he's like, hey, like, I know a friend who would love to have you come to their class and talk to their students about the insane persecution that Japanese people faced in this country. In this fictitious example, it proves to me that when you have a teacher who cares, when you have a teacher who asks students to meet the material and challenge what they're learning and get involved in a very proactive manner, that this can have ripple effects which literally change individuals' lives, families' lives, communities, and more greatly, society. And since we're talking about the extra credit assignment, I want to just give Mr. Shapiro a really heartfelt shout out in terms of the framing of his class. He said, this class is called Facing History and Facing Ourselves. And then like when Paxton's grandpa comes in, he's like, oh my God, we're literally facing living history. You know what I mean? And he's like literally just like flipping out. Like, teachers are huge nerds. A great teacher should be a huge nerd and should like love their subject matter like nothing else. If Mr. Shapiro has fallen into uncontrollable sobs in front of his students, in front of the guest speaker, I don't blame you, Mr. Shapiro. I was like also legitimately crying during that scene. And every time I watch it, I also cry because I'm so happy for Mr. Shapiro. Like, when I think about myself as a teacher and I think about the legacy I'd like to leave in my own students' lives, I think, you know, the reason why I want to be a teacher is because I just want to make a huge difference in one student's life. If 20 years, 30 years after high school, they remember me, Mrs. Mullick assigned this project to me, or we had this discussion in class, and this changed my life and set me off on a whole new trajectory. Like, that's literally like one of my goals as a teacher, is to impact even just one student's life so meaningfully. What do you think, Mr. Shapiro? Like, congratulations, you just earned that with Paxton. Huge shout out to Mr. Shapiro. You are freaking awesome. The last aspect of how Mr. Shapiro designs his curriculum and carries out his course that I love is that he seems to have a bit of a collaborative learning environment and classroom structure with his students. So we know in season two, when Ben is really upset that Davey has been dating him and Paxton at the same time, Mr. Shapiro is talking about an upcoming test, and then Ben's like, oh, do we have to choose one answer or can we choose two? And Mr. Shapiro's like, oh, I'm totally open to there being multiple correct answers. And obviously that's like really a hilarious line in the context of what's happening in some of the characters' personal lives. But also, if you really think about Mr. Shapiro, he's open to having students suggest things to him, and he's seriously entertaining new ways to make his classroom better and his teaching better. Continuing on about another thing I love about Mr. Shapiro, I want to talk about the type of classroom and learning environment that he is trying to set up. And honestly, I feel like there must have been a teacher in the writer's room, or somebody is like best friends or with a teacher or related to a teacher or something. But he does try to proactively in the first season, in the first episode, I believe, sit down Ben and Davey and be like, yo, you guys need to chill on the insane rivalry thing you have going because it creates a hostile learning environment for other students. And how would it do that? It can make things awkward for other students in the room, or, you know, there's two students who like hate each other and are vying for the teacher's attention and always trying to be right or always trying to be better than the other person. It can also create a really stifled environment where these two students might be competing so much with each other that other students do not have as much of a chance to grow and learn and participate actively in class because you have two know-it-alls who are trying to defeat each other constantly in class. So this shows me that he is concerned about the atmosphere in the room. That wraps up my discussion of Mr. Shapiro in terms of his academics and curriculum and course design. And now I want to move on to talking about Mr. Shapiro as a person. This is played as a joke many times, and it's a great joke. But this reality that he is trying to be better and he is willing to correct himself, and whether that's trying to use more inclusive gender pronouns or even trying to push more creative forms of assessment, like the joke about bad news, the school board won't let me test you on your feelings through an interpretive dance, or even the fact that he's considering having an assessment based on students' feelings, which is obviously like ridiculous, right? But he is considering their feelings at least. It shows that he's at least aware that students are having feelings towards the material that they're learning. At least they're hopefully having feelings. And then also in the end of season two, when Paxton has that panic attack during the history quiz, and Davey comes back and she's BSing him a bit, right? And she's like, you're just furthering toxic masculinity, Mr. Shapiro, by telling your male students that they cannot have vulnerable emotions. And I just love that Mr. Shapiro's so open to that. And he's like, thanks for calling me in. And I just feel like that's part of his attitude, where his white fragility is so under control, where other people would feel like they're being called out. He's like, no, no. Every time I'm being called out, I'm being called back in. I'm being invited back in, and I'm being invited to be a better person and to do better. And I just love that attitude. And honestly, for anyone, whether you're a teacher or not, like, I think that attitude, if more people adopted that attitude, this world would be such a better place. And yet another example, which is so good because this has happened to me as a student, is when Anissa first joins history and she's introducing herself, and then he accidentally calls Anissa Devi, right? There are two Indian girls in the school now, which is kind of hard to believe demographically in Southern California, but okay, we'll move on from that. And they look similar in some ways, like they have similar complexions and they have like the same colored hair and everything. I mean, don't all Desis like pretty much have the same colored hair? Regardless, I just love that moment where he's like, oh my God, I didn't say that. No, that was a mistake. And then he's literally just like, I resign. I cancel myself. I just appreciate that self-awareness. Like, as a teacher, he messed up. He realized that he messed up. And he called himself out first. Like, he was just like really straightforward and forthcoming about it. This same situation happened to me when I was doing my master's. So it was a class and it was like a curriculum and instruction class. So it was like one of our like basic core teaching teacher classes type of thing. And there was me who wore hijab in that class. And there was another Muslim girl in that class and she also wore hijab. I think we looked pretty much nothing alike. Our hijab styles were pretty different. And she would wear glasses half the time. I wear glasses all the time. Our names both started with M, Mariam, Mina. She was a little bit like fairer skin than me. And with her hijab style, like she would often have like some of her hair showing. And her hair was like much lighter than mine. She was Egyptian. And in this incident, which happened more than halfway through the semester, in class, the professor called on me. And she called me Mariam instead of Mina. And I was like, not saying anything. And Mariam, who was sitting like two seats away from me, she was like, what? And then there was like confusion in the classroom. And I was like, oh, did you mean Mina? And then the professor was like, well, what, sorry? And I was like, you said Mariam, but you were like looking at me and pointing at me. So that's why we're confused. And then she didn't acknowledge that she did that. She didn't apologize. And then she just like, this is a professor who is black, who is one of the professors who has fought for diverse reading materials starting in elementary school in English education. And she made this mistake. I would have loved her to like actually just cancel herself in front of our whole class, right? I wish she had just pulled a Mr. Shapiro. She didn't do that. And I wish she would have approached us personally after class, after in front of the whole class saying, that was wrong. I should not have done that. This is an example of racism or stereotyping or whatever, which is really wrong. She could have even turned it into a teaching moment. Hey, when you do this in class to one of your students, this is how you can make things better. This is how you can regain trust with some of your students, right? But even if she would have just like sent us an email or just came up to us after class and been like, I am so sorry that I called you the wrong person's name. That was not appropriate. That was not acceptable. And I have some maybe subconscious biases that I have to go home and reflect on and investigate. Another reason why Mr. Shapiro is a great teacher is because he is involved in extracurricular activities to help support the students. So at least in my high school and high schools I've worked in, you have to have a teacher or some type of staff member like be the person who like signs on to your club for your club to run. And so we know that Model UN, Mr. Shapiro is the teacher who is in charge of that club. And he actually like takes a weekend out of his life to go on this trip on this bus to UC Davis. And if I think about like, you know, Mr. Shapiro's personal life, it does seem like he has a personal committed relationship. It doesn't seem like he has any children, or we don't know any more really information about his personal life. So I can't really say how busy or not he is, right? Because for me, like with a toddler, I'm like, yeah, like good luck to me ever being able to be there on like a weekend trip or something like that, right? Like that would be like really hard and really unfeasible at this stage in my life. And you know, a lot of the times we do see that like younger teachers or teachers with less family responsibilities can kind of jump towards these more extracurricular support of students in their own enrichment academic activities. But we know that Mr. Shapiro does go on this trip, and he is making a personal sacrifice to do that, because instead of meeting with his partner and their therapist in person, which I'm assuming he would have done otherwise, he's doing a video call with them to discuss a new phase of him and his partner's relationship, where it's becoming a closed relationship. I just like really respect teachers who are there to help students further their own interests, and teachers who are there to do extra things. Like, no one is forcing you to do this, but you're just doing this because you love your students and you want what's best for them. And then we also see Mr. Shapiro hilariously at the 24-hour relay, and I just love how he's like, oh yeah, I'm a pacifist, so I'm gonna play these three notes of peace or something. All the students are confused. But, you know, he's also at this, like, 24-hour relay. It doesn't really seem like the funnest thing to do as an adult to be out in a park all day and all night with a bunch of teenagers, and you have to be responsible for them and make sure they're not getting into nonsense or getting into trouble or doing something illegal. And, you know, we do see that there is a problem at UC Davis, and we have more than just suggestions that there are some really questionable things happening at the relay in terms of student safety and what the school would allow in Trent's tent, and also Paxton, for example, getting stoned at the relay. I also like that Mr. Shapiro takes the students on a community service field trip to a park in Pacoima. I love that word, and I've never heard of that place, even though I grew up in SoCal. I also like how he's treating it as a meditative and a cleansing exercise, where he says to students, although we are going to be picking up trash, and this will hopefully translate to them being more mindful about littering and everything, he says, like, the real cleansing is going to be to our consciences. And I just like that he is bringing this mindfulness element into the class as well. No teacher is perfect, and Mr. Shapiro is not perfect, although he is a great teacher. And there are a few things that I would like to just point out about Mr. Shapiro before I move on to Mr. Kulkarni. And one of those things that Mr. Shapiro does, I feel like he's a little bit out of balance in terms of how much he tries to, like, correct himself and say the most politically correct or inclusive thing. It's just a little bit overwrought at times and a little bit overdone. Another thing that I don't really like about Mr. Shapiro is that he kind of has this mansplaining type of thing. It's not really exactly mansplaining, but it's this thing where he does with other cultures, which it seems like he does really enjoy learning about other cultures and immersing himself in other cultures. But when Devi talks about spreading her dad's ashes, he's like explaining to people, like, oh yeah, this is what the Hindu religion and rites of death are like. And then also when, like, Anissa comes into the classroom, he is asking her, like, really pointed questions, which forces her to explicitly state that she's Muslim in front of all of her other classmates. Although I don't think there's anything wrong with her being Muslim, and I don't think there's anything wrong with someone being Muslim, and I don't think there's something wrong with people saying that they're Muslim, I do think that it is not a professional move or not a good move to kind of force a student to divulge information about themselves if they are not doing it on their own willingly and readily. And speaking from a Muslim perspective, one of the weirdest things that Mr. Shapiro does say to Anissa is that, oh, I have a prayer mat in my car and you can pray in my classroom whenever you want. One, it's freaking weird that Mr. Shapiro has a janamaz in his car. And two, it's also just weird that he is, like, offering her this space to pray in front of all of the other students. The first thing is that he's assuming that she's a Muslim who prays. And I don't know if she is one who prays regularly or not. And the second thing that he is doing, which is a mistake, is that he is just saying it, like, out loud in front of all the students. And I just feel like Mr. Shapiro needs a little bit more of a filter and just reel it in a little bit. So Mr. Shapiro or other teachers who are in a similar situation to Mr. Shapiro and would like to support Muslim students in their, you know, religious identity and everything, firstly, he should pull Anissa aside privately and let her know, hey, in case you'd ever like to pray, there's a space for you in this classroom, and you can go ahead and tell any other Muslim classmates you have who might need a place to pray. And I think that would be a good first step, and to do that privately. And this is so that if she's not interested in praying at school, she doesn't have to feel weird about it, because only Mr. Shapiro knows that she's been offered this opportunity to pray, because there could be other Muslim students who hear about this and might start judging Anissa, or a student who doesn't pray. Even for me, I started regularly praying and being really particular about praying like 5 times every day when I was a junior in high school. The other suggestion I give to Mr. Shapiro is keep the prayer mat in your classroom and let the student know where the prayer mat is so that they know that they can just go and get it. It's also just really strange that Mr. Shapiro has this like emergency janamaz in his car. I have one in my car, but that's because I might need to pray while I'm out. Anyways, just completely confusing. And I just want to like digress for a second and talk about my own experiences praying at school. Generally speaking, I would come home in time to pray, so I wouldn't have to worry about praying at school. And there were 2 times where I had to stay after school that I remember, and I had to pray. And they were both really strange. Keep in mind, like, these are like the first handful of times that I'm praying at school in front of a lot of my peers, or that my peers or some of my teachers might be seeing me. This is the first time they would have been seeing me covering my hair and stuff, because I didn't start wearing hijab until my senior year of high school. It was just so awkward because, I don't know, I just felt like they were all looking at me and I just felt so uncomfortable. And I was also just so embarrassed. Like, I thought I was gonna pass out. I guess it's kind of a rite of passage. For me, I really wanted to start wearing a headscarf because of prayer. I need to be able to pray. If I'm running out of time for my prayer, I don't want to have to like miss my prayer just because I don't have the proper clothing to like actually pray in. Yeah, that started my hijab journey. And yeah, I'm just feeling really blessed. And it all started with praying at school. Those 2 suggestions really only apply to teachers on an individual level. And honestly, at this point in how I think about schools, I don't think that it should be up to an individual teacher to provide a prayer space for a Muslim or for a student of any other faith background. I think that a teacher should take the responsibility to create an interfaith room or chapel or prayer space in the high school, which is accessible to all students at all times that the school is open. And the reason why this school-wide resource is so much more important than what an individual teacher could do is because if this space is dedicated as the interfaith chapel in the entire school, then regardless of whether or not you're in your classroom during a certain time and a student would like to pray, or whether you have a sub that day or anything else, the student always has a place to pray. I think it is really important for this area to be somewhere near the main office where obviously the people in the office can keep an eye on the students in there, because you don't want anything weird happening in there, obviously. And I think it would also set up the tone for Muslim students in that school to say, hey, this is a safe place for you to be, and you are welcome here, and you are free to practice in the way that your religion asks you to practice. And it really just makes sense in terms of setting up those accommodations. So, Mr. Shapiro, I really applaud you as an individual. However, I would like to say that you need to think bigger and look bigger. For any teachers who are interested in trying to set this up at their school, to get started, I suggest that you find a few students at your school who would be interested in this as a resource for them. And find other teachers who are also interested in creating this resource for Muslim students and also students from other faith backgrounds, just so that there's some clout behind this request, and push it through and really see it happen, because obviously teachers have much more power than students in the schools, unfortunately. So being a liaison and using your power and influence in the school for this would be a really great thing. And setting up an interfaith chapel would help students for years to come. And it's kind of like teaching somebody to fish instead of just giving them a fish once or twice when they need it.
And now I'd like to talk about the other teacher. We see him in season 2, Mr. K, Mr. Kulkarni. I just, as I mentioned, love that he is cast as an Indian teacher, and
I think for Desi students, it probably means a lot for them to see another person that looks like them who actually works and teaches in their school. So let's start with what I like about Mr. Kulkarni. Just like Mr. Shapiro, he is also involved in extracurricular stuff for the school. So he is the girls' soccer coach. And it seems like he's like actually kind of serious about soccer and coaching soccer because he recognizes Anissa and knows about her from a previous tournament. Let's talk about Mr. Kulkarni's boundaries in terms of sharing things about his personal life. We hear that he's gone through a breakup recently, and we don't hear that in front of the whole class, right? Which may or may not be appropriate level of sharing. I don't know. But he does say that to Devi. He's using a personal life example to help prove a point in a really particular case. So I feel like that kind of level of sharing is also a little bit more appropriate versus like Mr. Shapiro's level of sharing, which I also think was a bit of a slip up. And as far as Mr. Kulkarni goes as a fellow English teacher, I have very little to judge him based off because we see very little of the English class. Really, the only thing we see him doing is the mock trial for The Great Gatsby. So what I can say is that one, I love that he thinks of this project because he's like, I am not going to read another essay on the symbolism of the green light at the end of the dock. And that is honestly something that is so true for teachers, especially if you often or always teach a particular novel. It can get really boring to go through having students give their, you know, analysis about certain things because, you know, you've probably thought about all of this and have heard all of this in classes in the past. But there are some really cool moments where students do think of something with a new perspective or with a different understanding, and those moments are always really exciting. But then again, just to remind Mr. K and myself and other English teachers like me who are nerds and love talking about books and just love getting into the nitty-gritty of everything, and also, for example, love talking about shows like Never Have I Ever, hey, Brown Teacher Reads, is that just as a teacher, you're not really there to like have epiphanies about the book in these discussions or, you know, projects or assignments that your students do. You are really just helping them learn different skills and explore different concepts and grow as people. And any of that type of nerding out and discussing books and like, you know, really going back and forth about certain ideas or certain choices that authors make, that is really something that we have to reserve for like literature circles like Brown Teacher Reads or your own book club or something like that. But moving on to the mock trial, I do think it's creative as hell when Mr. K wants to do this mock trial but put Daisy on trial. And I just love how fiction allows us to investigate our ideas on ethics and morals and life and how the world works and society. And I think Mr. Kulkarni does say something like that argument wouldn't hold in the court of law, but it definitely holds in the court of fiction. And I mean, that is so true, that fiction allows us to discuss real life things, but in the safety of a fictional environment. And so even like, for example, I can talk about the different pedagogical practices or what makes Mr. Shapiro great or what is a decision I disagree with and don't think is for the best. And I can do that in a very open way. It's also like a really safe way to do that too, because like one person individually isn't getting blasted because it's a fictional character. And I feel like that's one of the great things that books allow us to do. They allow us to think about subjects and situations and other things, and it allows for like really robust discussions and a back and forth because you can be that frank, you can be that blunt and honest without having to worry about like offending people because they're not real people, they're just characters. For the mock trial, as far as it goes with Mr. Kulkarni assigning groups and roles, I think that's a smart thing to do for a teacher, for them to sit down and do some, you know, calculus on what they think a student would be good at or a student needs to explore or what they would like to do. Also be able to, you know, create groups and everything like that in a really intentional manner. And then I also like that Mr. K is just like, Davey, you're not gonna switch groups because the groups are already made. You just have to deal with it. It's one project. You can do it, you know?
On top of that, I do like that Devi feels comfortable enough coming to Mr. Kulkarni, and maybe she's really at her breaking point, so she's just like, I don't care, like, I need to get out of this group, so I'm gonna go talk to him, like, it doesn't matter. But I do like that she does feel comfortable coming to him and telling him, and also asking for him to move her to a different group. I do have a feeling like it's part of their like desi connection, which helps Devi feel a little bit more comfortable with him. And we do also see that like Devi and him have their own like secret handshake, for example. And then John McEnroe, the narrator of the show, also mentions that Devi is one of Mr. Kulkarni's favorite students because they're both desi. Like, okay, yeah, that might be slightly problematic, but you know, that's fine. I'll give you that one, Mr. K. It's all right. One of my favorite students when I was doing my student teaching was Desi, and she was also freaking brilliant, and she was a great person. But her being Desi, like, was a little cherry on top. If we go a little bit further into the mock trial, the last thing I would say is that I just love, like, Mr. Kulkarni's attitude, and, like, he just brings so much hype. Like, he's literally wearing, like, what looks like judge's robes to the mock trial. That's legit. I feel like he's just, like, leaning into it and doing a great job. I have a friend who is an elementary school teacher. Her name's Asra. You're the best. She does a thing where she will incentivize her students to do something well as a class, and I think it's mostly behavior-wise, and then she will, like, dress up as a character and come to school as a certain character. And I think that's, like, something really cool and really fun for a teacher to do. Let's talk about some of the iffy parts about Mr. Kulkarni as a teacher. Mr. Kulkarni does have a bit of a teasing relationship with Devi where he makes fun of her and kind of calls her out. I do think this is part of his personality. I do also think it makes the show funny. And I also would just want him as a teacher to be mindful about who he is engaging in teasing behavior with and when he is teasing students. And does he have a line that he knows is appropriate and he will not cross that line so that he doesn't offend or hurt any student. Teasing is not bad in and of itself, but I feel like someone who has that personality type, especially as a teacher, like, you are kind of playing with fire because it will come back and burn you at some point. Another thing that is really questionable about Mr. Kulkarni is that he obviously has the hots for Kamala, and that's Devi's cousin, and it's kind of this like situation where like, oh no, my teacher's dating my mom, and that can be awkward and everything, and there are some like awkward moments where he's like, hey, like, tell your cousin I said hi, and then like her cousin's like, hey, like, yeah, tell him I say hi back. It's just kind of weird, right? And then like he also like literally asks Kamala out to the dance in front of Devi, right? And she calls him out for it. So yeah, it's just kind of like that little thing where you just can't escape like being brown, like all Desis know each other, all Desis are connected to each other. And like, it reminds me kind of working in the Islamic school environment where, you know, people you have an overlap with in multiple areas in your community, you are also overlapping with them at school, which can be a good and a bad thing. Yeah, it's like a double-edged sword. And so, Mr. K, I feel like we are gonna see you and Kamala's relationship take off a little bit in the next season, and I'm sure that will have plenty of tension for Devi, but an iffy move on your part. The last thing I want to talk about with Mr. Kulkarni, which I do not like, is that he does divulge to Devi that they just drink and do karaoke instead of chaperoning the dance. That was a very bad slip up, Mr. K, and he was literally doing that just to like impress Kamala and like have her come out to the school with him. And I'm like, Mr. Kulkarni, look at who's listening in on this conversation. Stop trying to score a babe and like realize that you're in a school and you're like outing all of your teachers right now for doing something I'm pretty sure is against school policy. That about wraps up my thoughts on the teachers in seasons 1 and 2 of Never Have I Ever. And I want to talk about what I'm looking for in season 3. So continuing on with Mr. Kulkarni, as I already mentioned, I think him and Kamala are going to have some type of a romantic relationship that will cause some type of problem for Devi. And part of that problem will be like
ew, my teacher's dating someone in my family, and that Devi is like seeing him extra outside of class and school, like if he comes to their house or something like that. But also it could be complicating for Devi because she's not allowed to date and Mr. Kulkarni works at the school, and I'm sure that he'll find out that her and Paxton are dating. And this is like, you know, kind of having like a spy with insider information that you don't want leaking out of the school. And I feel like for Desi kids, whether we were like Hindu or Muslim, in my high school, I feel like there was this unspoken pact where whatever was going on in the high school, you would never go and tell the parents or anyone else in that generation of the community, right? Some Muslim guy I knew that I was related to was dating a Hindu girl. And I saw them like cuddling at school, right? Basically. And I was like, oh,
I guess I will not tell your parent who is one of my family members that I saw you doing this, because I just feel like, you know, a lot of the times at schools, you do have this like dual identity type of thing going on. And like, even with Anissa, like she's with Ben, and imagine if like Mr. K was actually Muslim and he was like going through with the rishta with Anissa's cousin. It would be complicated when he would know that Anissa has a boyfriend, and you know, what do you do with that type of information? So Mr. Kulkarni could turn out to be the source of a leak in terms of leaking information about Devi's romantic life. I'm also hoping that the English class does cover a text, which is really exciting in its diversity and multiculturalism. And I hope that it's like Jhumpa Lahiri, the namesake or something, like, because they did have, I think, the Glass Menagerie in season one as an allusion to another text. So a lot of the times, like shows or movies or even books or poems and stuff, they will refer to other texts that already exist. So you kind of have to look at that other texts and see how does this correlate and respond. And like with Eleanor, we see that the overlap from the play and the show happened to be Eleanor's mom and her commitment to her family, just like we see in those two scenes that Eleanor acts. And then in season two, we see The Great Gatsby. We see the show exploring how similar is Devi to Devi Vishwakumar to Daisy Buchanan in the book. What are the potential overlaps going on there? So I'm wondering what the text will be for season three. I hope it is a South Asian text. Please, please, please. I'm getting so hyped just thinking about the possibilities. Don't disappoint Mindy Kaling and Kaling International and Lang Fisher. As far as it goes with Mr. Shapiro, I hope that we get a little bit more information about his personal life. I don't really think we will. And then just for him as a character, like as a fellow teacher, I would just be rooting for him to have these less awkward moments where he doesn't get into that overcorrection and like overexplanation thing. But honestly, I think they're gonna continue that with Mr. Shapiro because that just seems like part of his personality. I'm also really looking forward to what Mr. Shapiro is going to wear and what is gonna be written on his board. All right, this wraps up part two, all about the teachers at Sherman Oaks High School in the show Never Have I Ever. Stay tuned for another episode or two about seasons one and two before season three drops, inshallah. Head over to my TikTok and Instagram and check out posts related to the teachers at Sherman Oaks. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am so grateful that you're here. This is Mina from Brown Teacher Reads. I'm a South Asian Muslim high school English teacher, and I will catch you next time. Some thank yous go out to my husband, siblings, and mom, as well as Mash and PK for the music. Bye!